Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. We are the Dudley Boys of What Culture. I'm Adam Wilborn, joined by Michael Hamflet and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we're not going to review Raw, but also SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete. A quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflet and Sidgwick to review Raw, a divisive show, at least in the What Culture office.
Yes. It won't surprise people to know that I'm the one that liked it. Twist. So a lot of this, is, I think, is informed by WrestleMania season bias.
Yes.
But Sidge likes to speak of the trifecta. This was a trifedka for me. You know that?
I'm not having it because it's my life.
Put D there instead of saying it's a trifecta.
It's my
because they're different things. You're not going to get a hot match, a hot promo, and a hot angle on Monday Night Raw, Sidge.
So why do you not like it as much as AEW?
You know that as well as anybody.
Never understand you.
I feel like my Fed opinions can't be heard right now. What I want is a hot product. Throughout, what I want is matches that don't have to be good, but just have ramifications. Just have to have ramifications because that's what makes them good. Mm-hmm. It's not about the action; it's about the heat that's surrounded by the ramifications. And I do like good promos. I'm with him on that one. I like good promos, and I got loads of them here as well. Like, I genuinely don't need them. I like an angle or two, but I don't need as many as Sidge. I definitely don't need the matches as much as Sidge, but I do like a good promo. And I got tons of them. Loved how this was structured. Like, this was such to me, and I don't know if I'm speaking on behalf of WWE fans, because this is, when you say divisive, we were talking about this before we recorded. It's maybe not even the case with people that are predisposed to enjoy WWE, but I just really loved how this flowed as a 3-hour Raw. I'm not stupid, even though I like the Fed, right? 3 hours is a lot. Mm. It's like, that's a problem that Raw's had for over a decade now, and even the good ones, even the stuff with the really good stuff on it, can still suffer the 3 hours. When they produce a show that has content that I like, of which I think it's been the majority of Raws for the last year and a half, but the show itself, the 3-hour experience, is an enjoyable one. I think that's something different. I think that's a level that they don't hit very often. And I like to isolate it for praise on the weeks that they do, because I just, again, it's probably informed by the time of year, but it just felt like a very, very, very watchable flow of a 3-hour Raw, along with the good stuff that I'm enjoying.
There's some really good stuff on here, mostly dross, and I question some WrestleMania developments.
Show flew by for me, I have to say. Kept thinking, oh, we've still got Nia and Becky, last woman standing, to come. And then, oh, Cody Rhodes is here, and I'm doing this. And obviously, the contract signing, which we'll get into, because I'm really excited to know both of your thoughts on that. But let's start at the beginning of the show, where we see Cody showing up with his dog, Pharaoh, and the DIY and the Creed brothers are seen. And then Michael Cole references Jay versus Jimmy would just be the third ever brother versus brother match. Bret and Owen and Matt and Jeff. Matt Hardy was, of course, in attendance for this show.
I believe we have a button for this, and rare that I have to press it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no, sorry.
But it's for me.
Hamflet, would you like to...
I would, actually, yeah.
No! No, no, no!
Doesn't feel good, does it, Sidge?
It feels like, well...
It makes me feel sick to my stomach, if I'm being quite honest.
Makes me sick to my f***ing stomach, GR. I'm the game.
And this is, by the way... What stopped...
this is why I get the swear cut. I've done four.
This is what stopped this Raw from being perfection. Was the story after the fact that Matt Hardy was there. Look, it's contract season for Matt Hardy.
It was a PR stunt.
Yeah, I understand you do a bit of business when the Fed's in town.
And big money, Matt.
Indeed, trying to get a better deal. Wilborn's...
trying to get a deal.
Yeah. Wilborn softened the blow by making me realise that, well, yeah, NXT would work. So I can get on board with
fit
that.
Right, but in there.
But please, that's where he belongs.
It's never...
He needs to develop his talent.
Yeah. It's Matt Hardy, isn't it? It's never where it ends. Like, that man finds a way. Like, water in... Like, floods in heavy weather. That man finds a way through. And NXT would quickly become... You know what? Maybe we should think about moving this stuff to SmackDown. So, not great, but...
But as you say, Wilborn, if it ain't broken, why fix it?
Yeah, indeed.
I hopefully goes to WWE.
The mention was...
One of the few people you're like, no. Yeah, absolutely. I'll pack your bags myself.
Yeah.
The mention on commentary...
I'll buy the bus ticket.
So just got his bags, like, labelled hard. He's getting on a Greyhound bus.
Yeah.
It's just pointed to me, the mention in the commentary, why we get this out of the way now, because I don't want it to pollute the rest of Raw, as him being in the stands, because, yes, wrestlers can go visit their friends.
Yes.
You know, like, we just had this with Mercedes Moné last week. Wrestlers can go visit their friends and even sit in the stands to watch it, to feel the atmosphere and that. But this is the same company that, like, put Britt Baker on camera as Adam Cole's girlfriend. They went, oh, sorry, we had no idea. Like, these things happen on purpose in WWE, and knowing that Matt was going to be in the
She building. Wasn't affiliated with AEW at the time.
She was. This
no,
is
she
War Games.
Was,
yeah,
yes,
War Games.
Yes,
this
yes,
is like telephone, telegram, telewrestler. It will have absolutely got back that Matt Hardy was in attendance, and then the line would have been fed to Michael Cole. Don't just mention Bret and Owen. Mention Matt and Jeff as well. But you know, we know Michael Cole loves all of wrestling these days. But boss, they're both in AEW. And it's like, yeah, we're thinking of getting one back. That's definitely happened. That order of events has occurred.
Where is this? Maybe it was just a PR stunt.
Why would you want to bring up that bit terrible
of,
match?
Bit of serendipity.
Man, Jeff stunk.
That was awful. Maybe just a bit of serendipity.
Yeah.
Not all those matches where they're like, let's take this to Backlash.
Look, I said, realistic.
You know me, I don't really look forward to things. I don't think of the best case scenario.
Yeah.
So I'm not letting myself think it.
You're worried that he's using this as leverage of like, Tony, not sure if you saw, but I was in the crowd at Raw, so... Gonna get that contract sorted. Better hurry up.
I love this. Like, Dadley's in Matt Hardy tug of war, but it's like we're pushing him away.
Anyway, the show probably started with Jey Uso welcoming us to Monday Night Raw.
I suppose Jey and Jimmy, like at this point, this match and feud really, Fuad, really could go either way. So it's almost like
it's not going the way of Brett versus Owen, mate.
It's almost like a threat, isn't it? Like it needs to live in the middle because at the moment it's steering closer towards Jeff and Matt, and we need to at least pull back towards Brett and Owen.
Just somewhere, no way it'll be nothing close to Brett and Owen.
I'm not a dumbass. I just want it to live, I just want it to live in the middle. That's where I want it to be.
I don't remember Bret Hart ever doing that and getting the whole crowd going with him. So, anyway, Jey says, I know the bloodline's here.
Careful.
Get your...
Yeah, careful.
Oh, I stepped close to the line on the news and now I'm really treading on thin ice. He says, get your ass out here, basically, Jimmy and Solo Sikoa enter through the crowd. And there's a stare down and an Uso chant. But Jey says, look, regardless of the bad blood, he misses Jimmy. Say what you want, you know. But they don't talk anymore. He doesn't ride with him anymore. He doesn't see him anymore. Come back to him. Jimmy says, look, I never left. I protected you. You're so dumb you can't see it. It was your idea to leave the bloodline, and I helped you.
No, it wasn't. It was yours.
Yeah. I helped you because I'm your brother. You leave, what happens? You go off and become the biggest star on the Raw roster. You become the top merch seller. You become tag team champions without me. Who left who? Everything you did was big, and that's because of your big bro. The biggest moment of your career is because of me. And Jey says, no, the biggest moment of my career will be at WrestleMania 40 when I knock the yeet out of your ass. I don't know what that sentence means. But Jey clocks Jimmy, turns around, clocks Solo, who's jumped up on the apron, or stood on the apron, turns around into a Jimmy Uso super kick. Solo enters, grabs Jey, he's got his arms behind his back. Jimmy's going to knock seven bells out of him. But who comes to make the save but one? Cody Rhodes! Jimmy tries to fight him at the bottom of the ramp and just gets dropped. There's a Cody cutter to Solo who gets out of there, and Cody checks on Jey as Jey's music plays and the Mania signs in the background.
So many positives wrapped around an enormous negative in this segment. The enormous negative is that the story doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
the story really makes
no sense. But I thought it was the best story ever told.
Well, so did everybody in that building because it was hot as balls, right? It doesn't make any sense. So much retcon going on here. You can pick.
Although we've got to like think about Johnny America. He likes it, so therefore it's good.
You're not my friend Johnny viewing experience. He's far more interesting than Johnny wrestling. You see how that works in two ways.
Right there. Johnny wrestling works with the feds.
Anyway, yeah, this is the best this program's ever been, and it made no sense. Like, finally...
But Raw?
No. Jay versus Jimmy.
Okay.
The program's been kicking ass for 18 months. Right? Like, this needed this.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? There's actual heat between this. They've played on the idea that Jimmy has now cost Jay all of his big solo title opportunities, and it was just being left to fester. Again, this feud's been left to fester a couple of times. None of what was said was true.
No.
Right? Everything, like... And you... The evidence is there. You just watch it back, and like Jimmy turning in Finn, like Jimmy even saying, "Like I saved you, I got your bloodline, mate. You're back in it.
You're loving your life.
Saved from what? The life that you loved. Like you get to travel all over the world eating sushi on planes. You saved him from that. None of it makes any sense. But what you have now, and this has been missing the whole. Like I love clown Jimmy Uso in the summer months. Love it. But when they were definitely not giving up on this as a WrestleMania singles match, it needed to be something more. It really, really did. And in this, they've finally harnessed that amazing babyface energy Jey Uso's got. Every week I want to do this because every week I can't wait to get there.
Do what?
And do this. Philadelphia, I'm going to be there doing that, right? I can't wait for that. But that energy was going to waste because there wasn't like a believable heel up against him. And the, what? Go on. That's smart ass.
Right? Just that energy is going away.
It was because there wasn't like, there was nothing he was really having to sink his teeth into at all. Right? You had Clown Brother who ran in. That was the extent of it. The Rumble exchanges were funny. Jimmy Uso was patter in that Rumble, but Jey Uso was the Iron Man and nobody cared. Their exchanges weren't hot. It was, we were on the stream and I was like, this is not happening, Mania. It's death. Still could be death, but I think this is the best attempt to turn it around because it was just really, I don't know, it was invigorating watching Jimmy. He bought his own bollocks, even if it was bollocks. Like, his performance was strong, I thought. Like, Jey Uso is sick of the nonsense from him, and that's the babyface Jey Uso needs to be. And I practically punched the air when Cody made the save. This, for Cody, was a night where it's structured where he's doing his big promo thing. He's gonna say something to The Rock.
So clap back.
Yeah, clap back. It's going to be top of the hour. The Cody bit is here. Well, no, the Cody bit's wherever the hell it needs to be because he's the frigging hero. He's the top guy. He's the baby face, and he'll do what's right no matter. Like, he's not looking at the run sheet.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, well, I'm not here till the second hour. He's like, no, he's just a top baby face, and he's a good mate. And I love that. I was like, of all the people to make the save, like, Cody being there reminds you that this doesn't just have to be a mid-card concern because Jey Uso's main event in name... Only really, he's not really a headliner. Cody being out there to help his friend is like, this is what we built all this on. This was like summer 2023 in a nutshell, and it just made me feel good to have Cody still having his back. And then later on, because I'm going to go it alone, Jay's like, well, I'll be there for you. You can't be. I've got to honor my word, all that sort of stuff. I love the Raw good guys. I love them. So I love this ending to it as well.
Wasn't entirely a catastrophe, this. What I will say is that it's not just the logic that this is missing, it's the emotion. It's meant to be a huge deal that these two are coming together. It's that Taz versus Sabu principle. AEW did it with Cody and MGF. I think it's to their credit, I guess, with WWE that they've tried to really preserve this coming together. Is this, ooh... You don't expect to see this very often, and therefore it's meant to be special. But I just think Jimmy, they just completely had a with their trousers on when it comes to Jimmy Uso and his character motivation.
Jimmy Puso.
And the fact that he's a hypocrite and a clown. And, I mean, they've just completely, literally lost the plot here and how it should have played out. It doesn't feel like this huge betrayal.
There's such a good line in here about, like, you won the tag belts with somebody else. In a different story, that's a really great beat.
Yeah.
Like, Jey Uso was forced to move on, and now Jimmy resents it. That could have been quite a good
Jimmy
use of
Uso
that.
Is not a particularly good singles wrestler, which it all has to matter at some point if you cannot get it done in the ring, even in the Fed.
I don't want this to die, but it might.
And Jimmy Uso has proven that he's not, like, these TV matches have completely sucked. His character is all over the place. He's a hypocrite who, I just don't know, they've just... had a meh. They've had a nightmare in terms of the plotting and the A to B to C. Just doesn't, it makes no sense whatsoever. I just didn't get any emotional hook here. I don't think Jimmy's particularly good. Jay, by saying, you know, I miss you, we don't really talk to each other. I felt it from him.
Yeah.
I did feel it from him. But Jimmy's facial expressions were just so cartoonish and overblown.
It's one of them on SmackDown where he accepted the challenge of Jay and they did the WWE thing of hold the camera on him. And it felt like about 20 seconds. He's just going.
I don't think he's very good at all, to be honest. I don't think Jimmy Uso is a... The thing is, it's like, in a way, it's bad that he's a prelim comedy guy and a good tag team guy.
Putting one of the best tag team guys, probably.
I think the Usos are completely overrated. It's like JD McDonagh versus Will Ospreay, the Usos versus the Young Bucks for me. It's just levels to the exact same.
They're dead. Well done. They're never kicking out from that.
Just levels to the exact same style.
Yeah.
Just promoted under different
don't
officials.
Don't disagree with that. Yeah.
It's a bollocks argument somewhere. It's like
I don't care about these things anymore.
And they were like, oh, every bloody Young Bucks match, and they're all in super kicks, and everyone's like, literally what happened.
I know, but I'm not interested in these people. I'm not interested in these people.
Smart move.
Yeah, not interested in these people anymore. I just don't think Jimmy Uso's very good, and I don't think his work has a lot of substance, emotion, or logic to it, and that has been pretty, you know, I think there's been a good underscore of that when you watch him in this slot that he's just not really equipped to do.
I'll say this for the failings of this story, and again, that's why I say it was the best week for it, because I think they fought to establish something from a couple of the messes they've made with this story. And I still can't really decide where I sit with Jey Uso, because I just enjoy watching him. But then I feel like I've seen enough match evidence that he's maybe never going to be the guy. And he's a great tag wrestler, and there's no shame in that. But ultimately, that's maybe where they belong, is them coming back together. Every year, we talk about the WrestleMania match that, could struggle on the night, and at the moment I've got big fears for Bayley and Io, right?
But so you're going to say AJ and LA Knight then?
No, I've got no fears for that. It's going to suck, but I expect it to. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. We all need the toilet. But this one is different because I kind of expect that a bit.
It's going to go in 20 minutes.
And
you get to go yeet.
Yeah, like I hope again.
I don't think I'll say the word yeet once. If I'm next to you.
Oh, don't you worry.
And you force of Wilborn, we'll see.
Two nights of it as well.
But I think that's a test of it, you know. Like, in these smaller Raw buildings, no bother. But in a stadium, we saw ultimately the charm run out halfway through the Roman match in Detroit. Like, this has happened to Jey Uso before. The entrance that night was the best that entrance has ever looked.
Yeah.
And then the first sort of 5 or 6 minutes, like, he's going toe-to-toe with Roman. This is gripping. That match died on his ass after, like, by the time it hit the 10-minute mark, we're still doing this. Like, Roman's going to win. How's it going to happen? Like, this one, I'm not even saying it now, got a feeling, guys, this one might not work out. It's like, right now it's not working out, and we'll see on the night if they can sort of reverse that.
We'll get a video package for what was briefly match of the year in 2024, Becky Lynch versus Nia Jax, which is tonight's main event. And Adam Pearce is having a row with someone on the phone when Paul Heyman approaches him and says, look, Jimmy and Solo weren't authorized by anyone, not The Rock, not Roman Reigns, not anyone in the bloodline. And now, trust me, they'll be gone from the building. I'm only here on official business, and I'll leave once that business is over. But when I do big business, everyone's going to be caught off guard. And that's not a prediction, that's a spoiler.
There it is.
Then we got our next qualifier for that six-pack tag ladder match thing. It was Regeneration X, DIY, Gargano and Ciampa versus the Creed Brothers. I had a load of fun watching this, I have to say. I was conflicted by this because I thought it was just great. And I thought they, you know, made the Creed Brothers look fantastic in defeat. But I also watched that and I was like, so why aren't the Creed Brothers in the ladder match?
The exact same thoughts and feelings watching it.
This is a point for after the match, really. But I'll say it now because it reminded me of SmackDown as well, where I was sort of, within this tag thing, I'm still not mad into the ladder match, but it was done and bait. Where gradually I was thinking, I kind of really want them to win this. And I'd like Pretty Deadly look like they're going to nick it. And I thought, they've actually got me. Something I think I've realized with this build specifically, and it's about like bigger picture fed better than it used to be, is that the years and years and years of the wrestlers that it's like my dream to get on WrestleMania. Like I sort of resented them for it because it was like, you're a big loser. You're just not going to because you're not a bigger star as the ones that come round. Like, you're not getting the Undertaker match and you're not getting the Shane McMahon spot. So, tough asshole. You know, and it was part of the system they were in.
Yeah.
Whereas, I think I just like this version of it more. That, I buy it. I think, with Bayton, they've made the final and I really want them to make it onto the card to get this, one more crack at the belts. I had it here. Really, I wanted the Creeds to win. But they did sort of work me, and I was buying that DIY feel like they need this.
Yeah.
They've lacked any kind of validation from this company that they've loved, that finally is maybe going to love them back for a second. I did quite like that by the end.
I started during this match going, maybe there's some way where or certainly throughout this show where it was like, well, they're not going to throw out, you know, the New Day versus Akira Tozawa and Otis, or, you know, not going to have a no finish for that. So I'm starting going, oh, maybe the Good Brothers do some AOP in the Street Profits, but then I remembered that's just one side of the bracket.
Yeah.
I'm desperate to just be like, can we just not have that and just put the Creed Brothers in because they're mint.
Last Chance Losers Battle Royal, please.
Yeah, but there's not enough spaces. So no. I'm like, oh, I'll make it a 7-pack rule. Like, yeah. Yeah, so we get the dives from DIY early.
With our thought process, wrestling's so stupid. There's not 7 packs of beer, I'm afraid. So there can't be 7 teams in one match. Can't happen.
So DIY hit dives to
take. Plus 7 in the elimination chamber. Once there's only 4 pods. Yeah. Just the third man in the ring.
DIY hit dives early on to take us to a break. When we come bound, Brutus chucks DRI all over the place. Julius comes in, they double team Ciampa. Julius does that spot where he gets someone in a vertical suplex on his knees and then gets someone up and does a delayed vertical suplex.
Kicks ass.
Brutus hit Gargano with a vertical suplex as well, and they both hit standing moonsaults to get a 2 count. Gargano saves Ciampa from a Brutus ball. But Brutus slams Gargano and then tackles Ciampa over the announce desk for another break. When we come back, Ciampa hits a reverse DDT, hot tag to Gargano, runs wild. Ciampa hit Julius with a second rope air raid clash for 2. Julius and Ciampa exchange, and then Julius puts him in an ankle lock. Gargano tries to make the save, and Julius power bombs him with 1 arm.
Oh my God.
He did the thing he does. He always goes.
It's the best. Too good. It's better than these lot.
Gargano and Ciampa both get put in ankle locks, but manage to get out of it. And I thought they were going to do the FTR spot for a split second, but they reverse, put them in cross faces. Creed's fight out. They just. I'm right in thinking this. They did just pick them up and chuck them at each other, didn't they, basically?
Yeah.
They both hit Ciampa with moonsaults, which gets a 2 count. They set up for a Brutus ball. Ciampa slips out of it, though. Cradle. Brutus breaks that up. Gargano gets rid of him. Julius has got a cradle on Ciampa, but Gargano super kicks him. Ciampa reverses the cradle. 1, 2, 3. DIY qualify for the Mania match.
I'm really hoping Sid's got the same flashback here. The Doomsday reversal was Steiner's Beverly's from the Rumble, wasn't it? Like, it's a really hard thing to pull off because you've got to be like, hang on, you're so tough, you're just holding me on your shoulders. And I've got to go, it takes a lot of athleticism and you've got to buy the wrestlers doing it. So it's a great spot that not a lot of teams can pull off together. These two, I just got totally worked. Again, like, I felt a bit of magic for DIY. I think it's been a good few months for them. Thank you, The Miz. Like, for getting them going, for making them make sense in the main roster in a way that they're, like, kind of bland matches weren't. They're bland characters and they needed a bit more. As I said at the top of the podcast.
So the answer to everything for you is just become a clown.
No, but, like, be a clown and then, like, pivot a little bit to care a bit when there's ramifications.
Okay.
Like, sprinkle with them with some Miz dust, basically.
Miz dust and a few stips. Miz dust, stips and bits. Like,
simple.
It did. This tournament has really, really worked. Honestly, like, I don't think this is a... What did you say on the SmackDown review? It was like, Tag Division's just stacked. It was like, no, it's just big. Like, but that's all right. Like, because then you... Again, I did really want the Creeds to win going in. But I did get worked. I thought DIY had a really great night here. There was a sense of panic about, for them, it feeling like a last chance. I don't have, again, it's a lot of this is big picture, a lot of it's faith in the system. If this isn't the Creed's year and they don't get onto the card, like next year is, or the year after is, we are just getting started with them. And in a promotion that makes sense, that's all right. There's a lot less to fear now about, like, every WrestleMania was just death or glory for all these years. And it doesn't have to be that way. I get why the wrestlers would think that. Because you just never know if it's going to be your time. But, like, look at Julius Creed in this one. Like, I don't want to understate Brutus's contributions to the team. But, like, Julius Creed, as, like, Sidge identified from the early days of NXT, is going to make it to the very top.
You drafted him for your roster, didn't you?
I did, yes.
These as a tag team have got a longer road to travel than just this WrestleMania. It doesn't necessarily feel like that for DIY. And I just thought, it wasn't just, like, the action, which was quick and fast and DIY of old, cruiserweight classic stuff. The facials were good. For a change, Johnny Gargano, like, end of the world stuff, actually sort of made sense. And Ciampa helping him over the line reminded me of the 2016 days when it was like, you kind of need your big mate to get this done. There's a lot to this, I thought.
You're right, at 41, Gargano and Ciampa ain't going to be tagging.
Yeah, it's like, that was the problem. They come up to the main roster and like Johnny wrestles him. Great to be here in the big wide world of WWE. Mate, like, I've seen you at this for like 6 years. Like, tell a different story, and I think they have.
Yeah.
I was into this.
The action was really, really hot, really well worked at times. And I will say that the layout was one of the more, I don't know, is that harsh? Because I thought the last 10 minutes of the gauntlet last week were really, really clever. But on that gauntlet, I would argue for the second consecutive week, Triple H, who I keep being told is really good at the basics, really good at the simple stuff, this timeless guy, it's great, never goes out of style. Booker. The second consecutive week, he's put two babyface versus babyface matches on, and the babyface, I'd argue, didn't need the win or wasn't the one I personally liked the most, has got away with one, stolen one. Like, I'll get onto my thoughts on the whole Sami Zayn, Chad Gable situation when that arises. But again, it's like, the Creeds are better and they're cooler and they're fresher, and I haven't seen them wrestle enough matches for a lifetime 2018. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I will say that it was weird. Like, you know those matches where the Young Bucks versus Jurassic Express right before they do the Lucha Brothers cage match, that happened on Dynamite. Nasty Boys versus the Hart Foundation. That sort of tag match where the walls seem to be closing in on the heels, but they just do a smash and grab and get away with it. That had that exact feeling with DIY wrestling here, but they're meant to be the baby faces. I like. Yeah. It was like this really potent strain of like, no. They're going to do it. They can't find a way. Look how good their opponents are. Bloody hell, they found a way. And it's the baby faces. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's how it played out in the last few minutes. Like, really, 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 really shockingly dramatic. The last 3 minutes of this were like, bloody hell, this is some match this is. But again, I've seen enough DIY to last a lifetime.
I feel like this has been a litmus test for a lot of these teams who you can't really tell. It's like, again, I think it's a busy division, but not always a particularly good one. He has booked tag teams again. He likes them more than Vince McMahon ever did.
Mm.
But I think this tournament has been a good test of like seeing who the over ones are. And in this case, you put two ones against each other rather than having maybe the over team and the less over team.
Bruce hit a cannonball off a ladder.
That's a thing.
Yeah. They are doing things that you want to see more than DIY. But there was almost an element of, like, you've still got it to DIY here, which normally is saved for, you know, the wrestler that's almost retired. There's a bit of, like, internal, I would speculate at least, there's probably a bit of internal wrestler motivation here. It's like where they're getting their attaboys backstage and being like, next year, kid. That kind of thing, that way to keep them, keep them hungry.
They'd be starving at this rate, Sidge. Right, we go backstage. Andrade's there. There's no...
Wrestlers are starving, which I hate.
There's no Damian Priest, but there is Finn Balor, Rhea Ripley, Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh. Of course, collectively,
they're in the f***ing Judgment Day. Yeah.
What's going on the inside?
Just hate them.
Yeah.
Really bored. Really, truly bored.
We're coming to an end of a golden era with the Judgment Day. Jury's out on the whole booking period, but...
That counts, by the way, as a swear word. I didn't say it.
Yep, got it.
Golden era.
Dom and Rhea say to Andrade, things have changed.
I just hate them. I think they're fake wrestlers.
Things have changed.
Finn Balor looks so funny.
Yeah, he's having the best time.
Yeah.
They're in charge now, basically. Andrade's going to have to impress them. This club's exclusive. And Finn says, you got a match next week. And Andrade says, yeah, I'll see you. Yeah, you'll have to see what's going on. But, Damian Priest comes in. There's a little moment between him and Andrade. Priest is furious about DIY winning. And he said, JD Minor, you sucked last week. Ricochet made a fool out of you, which means tonight Dominic's going to make things right by beating Ricochet. And I like Dominic Mysterio. In fact, he was caught off guard and he's like, yeah, well, actually, probably going to have a word with Postman Pierce right now, if anything. So
For the first time since he's been back, I'm not totally bored by the existence of Andrade. Him trying to like steal Dominic away from the Judgment Day. He's like, that's got me leaning in a little bit. I'll look a little bit closer at that. I don't know if it's for a SmackDown multi-man that you want. Could be. But first time since he's been back. I was like, oh, yeah. You got to say next week, Andrade. haven't felt that for 4 years.
Yeah, I still don't. I just don't get them anymore. Never, I never did. Not my kind of comedy. They're not intimidating. They're not as funny as they used to be, even though I never found them funny. Go away.
It was funny when they laughed at Don Mysterio kicking Edge in the cock. That was
and that was good stuff. And then Dominic in the program with Ray was genuinely good stuff. Watching Rhea Ripley be basically harder than the rest of them and more genuinely intimidating than the rest of them was good, incredibly effective stuff given what a star she is.
It's help me out here.
It's had its moments.
Yeah.
It's been really, really effective in building the Dominic and Rhea characters. But I just watched them with this dialogue, this delivery, this tonal mess of not that funny, not remotely intimidating, and I've seen them for a long time, completely done with the Judgment Day. Never was a Judgment Day guy, but I am done.
We lived, we laughed, we loved. Yeah. But it's past tense now.
They announced Thunderbolt Patterson for the 2024 Hall of Fame, and then we get Caden Carter and Katana Chance. They're taking some time away from the club because they bloody love to party, those two. Against Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. This went like 2 minutes, and basically the story was, I think it was Katana fell awkwardly. She banged her knee when flipping out of a suplex. She's selling the leg injury. The referee's like, give her a sec. Indy Hartwell backs off, goes into a corner, and LeRae's like, get out of the way. Takes out Carter with a baseball slide, slams Katana's leg into the post, puts a single leg, really deep single leg crab on her, and gets a submission win. A bit nasty this from Candice LeRae again. That's 2 weeks in a row.
I thought Candice LeRae was superb here.
Superb.
And Katana Chance, right? Getting a leg bent like that.
Superb.
I thought Candice LeRae was great here. Really, really liked her individual performance. Use Katana Chance for how flexible she is and make it a little breathe.
I will Ospreay and I'm bored of him. Candice LeRae is superb.
Like her. Nice to see her doing something that she's sinking her teeth into. I'm going to give with this hand. Don't worry, sis. I'm going to take away.
Please
with this
take
one.
Away. Please take away.
I'm going to take away with this one. Already, I am sick of pig thick Indy Hartwell. Like,
she's an idiot.
She stood in the ring last week when Candice LeRae is saying that. And she's like, wait a minute, what happened there? I mean, I did take advantage with a roll up. Like, Candice LeRae's gone nutso. Like, evil glint in her eye, looking to snap a leg for a win. Nothing wrong in that, by the way. Like, if you're going to be a rule bender, you're going to be a leg bender too. So, like, she's taking those shortcuts, but she's getting a win. It's about time they started winning. Mm. She was embarrassed with what happened at Elimination Chamber. Like, she got that Bluey gear made for nothing. So, taking steps to change her career, but wrestling's got a bloody wrestling, hasn't it? It's like, what are you doing? Winning. You f***ing loser. Like, they can't just let it be. She should already be deciding, I'm in for this. Like, our fortunes have instantly turned around. I am in.
Or out.
Or out.
Yeah.
Or like, I'm a nice person than you. I don't like this path. We're done. But it's wrestling. It's like, I think I need to give this 6 weeks of careful thought as you continue to break people's legs and challenge people's dead family members. Too stupid. But I do like this direction for Candice LeRae, and I think she's the wrestler to potentially make it work too.
I'm going to take with one hand and take more with the other here. Candice LeRae just doing pretty generic heel fare. The idea that it was superb to me is outrageous hyperbole. And I need to say that again. Like, outrageous. So there's that.
Okay.
Secondly, I do like your point because it's very true. Like, Indy Hartwell, how do you not know what's going on? You know how one of my biggest bugbear, and you could probably extend this to other wrestling as well. Like, the fact that it's filmed, even by a visible camera, is itself a plot hole. The fact that they tell these stories in front of a crowd, it's like you should be able to see where an imminent betrayal is coming from, even if there isn't a filmed backstage segment that is in front of an invisible camera.
Yeah.
Even away from the invisible camera, you could probably see, like, for example, if the WWE fans who don't know how to use Google can sense that The Rock is foreshadowing a betrayal of those losers in the bloodline, how can Roman Reigns or the wise man, Paul Heyman, not see it? It's that's just a flaw with the medium, okay? It's not invisible camera stuff. This Indy Hartwell stuff. So there's that inherent flaw.
Yeah.
Right? There's the, in terms of stupidity, the inherent flaw on the mid-level, the invisible camera on the high level of stupidity, yeah? And then on the highest level of stupidity, you got Indy Hartwell. It's not like, oh, why don't you watch the show? It's like she's getting clockwork oranged.
Yeah.
The footage in front of her eyeballs, and then the next week going, I didn't see nothing.
It's like one of my pet hates is when you get a sneak attack from the front. You know, when the way they have to shoot it because wrestling's dumb. It's like, oh, well, they're coming down this corridor at quite a pace. I'm going to get speared.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Right, we get Cody Rhodes next. They aired clips of The Rock on SmackDown, and Cody Rhodes comes out, and what do you guys want to talk about? I don't think he actually said that this week, but still.
God damn it, I'm in hell.
He says...
I love that, like, correcting yourself that because he didn't say it, not because of that, like, performance
no,
of it.
No.
Sorry, guys, that was inaccurate.
Now, make me break out the Joe Biden impression.
People love his Joe Biden voice.
What's Joe Biden?
It's for, I don't know. It's just, I'm not playing around, guys. Beck's got to finish the story.
Apparently Joe Biden's in the family. That's news to me.
So Cody says, in less than 3 weeks' time, he's going to be in the main event of Mania, challenging the title again against Roman Reigns. And this Friday, he's going to have a conversation with Roman. But there are complications, namely The Rock. Rock on Instagram. The Rock concert. Too bad he couldn't be here tonight, though. But he noticed on the Instagram videos, not how he responded. Well, we'll get to how he responded to Cody's emotional promo in a short while. But he referred to himself as our favourite heel, and that means Sidgy's the bad guy. Seen a lot of heels in the past. Bobby Heenan.
You're being a dick. He said, we're not insulting people here, right. Which I thought was good, because WWE has for years insulted my intelligence.
He's again drawing that line between the alpha of all, the versus wanting to be a man or whatever in 2024.
Yeah. He talks about Anderson, Michael Hayes, Ric Flair, all heels. He says, Rock, I don't think you're a heel. I think you're an asshole. But he didn't want Rock and the Seven Books team to get upset. There's no crying in wrestling, he says. Rock mocked him for getting emotional last week, but wasn't Rock the one who was crying behind the scenes this entire time, crying to his buddies on the TKO board? He thought he'd be great PR for WWE until he wasn't, and all the signs and reactions happened. But the board was filled with yes people, which is why they initially agreed with The Rock. They weren't going to tell The Rock the truth, but Cody Rhodes will. He says, look, Rock, you're a lot of things, a lot of wonderful things. You're the great one. You're Brahma Bull, et cetera, et cetera. You're the only guy that Cody will ever stand in the ring with who belongs on Mount Rushmore, but you're also a whiny bitch. Don't think for 2 seconds that this locker room needs Rock more than he needs it.
Why has Cody Rhodes in your head become Dax Harwood? slash The Undertaker.
What do you want to talk about? The business. What else is there? You ain't backstage talking about the business. You ain't backstage.
There's tequila and family.
Man,
the three things in life.
Business, family, and drinking out of f***ing vases. Because a glass ain't enough.
like Brian Potter and Phoenix Knight. And he says about The Rock bringing up his wine. And Cody says, I know your wine. But he says she's a wonderful lady.
The burned girl.
He got
Kane.
Got nothing but respect for her. Maybe The Rock should do the same. He talked, The Rock did, about whipping Cody in front of his mime and thought that Cody's mime's going to cower and tremble. But she's not afraid of anything. She ain't afraid of The Rock. She beat up an undercover cop at a Willie Nelson concert.
Did a fist bump for that.
Like, yeah. That was good. He's been asked, how is he going to get past all the bloodline, etc.? Will it be a fair fight? He doesn't know. Doesn't know if he's going to finish the story. What does The Rock know? How can he be so sure of himself? He keeps forgetting he hasn't been in the ring for years. On April 6th, even, the bell will ring.
Damn right, it's April 6th. April 6th and April 7th, heaven.
It's got the ick.
That one night, too.
It's got the ick.
What happens when the bell rings, basically?
My wife says that all the time, and I never understood what it meant.
To you.
Until now.
Will the great one joke?
Kind of a joke, I think.
The humour is at my expense, so in a way, I win.
I did say that I gave her the opposite of the ick the other night.
That's ooh. Nice.
Trapped a spider. Just forthright. Just went straight in there. It was a big bastard.
I respect that. I know some big men that don't like spiders. I think you know what I'm talking about, Siggy.
There was a freak out. Ah, spider! And I was like, send for the man. No messing about. Go downstairs, get a glass. So is there any card up there? Paper's not going to handle this guy. So I need some card. So I guess here's some card. Card.
Over the top. Hey, spider, real glass. Cry me a river.
Cry me a river. I encase him in the glass. I slide the card underneath, and then I treat him humane-like. And then just send him on his next adventure.
Chase him out of territory, basically.
Yeah, he did the job on the way out. That was real,
ain't
man.
Putting over no goddamn arachnids. What the hell happened to this business?
Anyway, what's going to happen when the bell rings? Is the great one going to show up? Is it going to be Big Dwayne Energy or will it be LDS, Lil Dick Syndrome?
Useless. But then you read out the lines from the Rock concert and it's useless when you read out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Lines in the hands of stars.
That's what the Fed is. Trying to tell you.
Lines in the hands of stars.
Useless.
He talks about the Rock referring to himself as the final boss, puts over Brian Gewirtz for the name. He doesn't...
No, it's not actually me. So...
Oh, straight, what a loser. Promo went 20 seconds under and he dogs a head. Yeah, that one. I wrote that, actually. No credits in WWE, but I'll take it myself. He asked me, Gewirtz killed a business. I'm trying to make money with the NWO when he's trying to make Raw funny. Funny ain't money, Gewirtz.
Anyway, he says, the Rock's not going to be the final
remember
boss.
That. Remember that in 2000.
I remember the Gewirtz era was very much, he's killed a beer.
Yeah, it was proper like 2000.
We kind of did.
Thank God for SmackDown with the wrestlers living on that Gewirtz horse shit. I got Charva on Thursdays.
Dedicated your life to this.
No, it's like that was when I was like, you know what? I think I've got TNA on Wednesdays.
The Rock isn't going to be the final boss. He's just going to be Roman's side chick. And then he gets interrupted by Paul Heyman, who basically apologized for his admittedly dumb plan to get the off-duty NYPD officers on Cody Rhodes. Cody said, I didn't ask for an apology, but he invites Heyman into the ring. Heyman's like, I'm good on the apron, thanks. He's got a message from the tribal chief, Roman Reigns. He says, look, I know I'm not a trustworthy person, but Roman Reigns is a man of his word. And when you go face-to-face with Roman Reigns on SmackDown, there will be no other member of the Bloodline aside from me, and I'm no threat, basically. Rhodes is happy with all that. Heyman says, oh, I've got to mention one thing. When you show up to SmackDown, if Roman's going to be alone, you have to be alone too. Cody Rhodes accepts and shakes Paul Heyman's hand.
A nice additional hook for the face-to-face on Friday. Oh. It didn't really need one. Their face-to-face last year was captivating and ultimately foreshadowing in how Roman was a little unserious. And I thought, oh, that's his arrogance. And then he friggin' won. So I think it'll be different this time around. I'm interested to see the mirroring from last year's when they did that. This was magnificent. I thought Cody Rhodes continues to be brilliant at this. Mm-hmm. unshakable in his conviction of what this character is, about what this story is. Not many wrestlers can do, like, yes men on the board, but like, because of the way The Rock started to mention, I'm the CEO and the boss of all this, like, it takes a very credible babyface to challenge that notion. This was not, like, a few years ago, this would just be the usual babyface comes out, this company sucks, actually. Like, it's very different this time. It's very much that, like, The Rock is controlling an element of this that I think sucks when, look at the people here tonight. This is the version of it I love, and I've helped create this. You are nothing to do with it. Like, I love that detail. That's how you do the corporate baddie versus babyface goodie in 2024 that isn't Vince and Austin.
Yes.
Because there was one Vince and Austin and everything else was a copy of a copy of a copy. This was not that. And I'm glad they kind of, I think they've, it wasn't something that, I just didn't need The Rock to be talking in those terms, but I thought Cody's folded that in quite nicely. I actually quite like it as a detail. It has reminded you that there is a power dynamic that Cody needs to tackle here, even if he's the reason why WWE's hot, and we know that. Again, dumb scripting in the hands of stars just becomes over in the buildings. It's the same stuff that The Rock does. I thought that, like Little Dick Syndrome line was trash, but so was Diarrhea Dwayne, and then we kind of moved on, and it hasn't killed the story in any way, so fine. It's Cody. He cannot be stopped. Like, he is an immovable object, and please belt him up. Like, every single week I think this, because it's perfect. This character is perfect.
I'm not doing a gimmick, I promise. Because if you've listened to me on these podcasts for the last however many months, I think Cody is absolutely sensational. I think he is the man. I think he can truly transcend that synthetic presentation and appear like a human being and not a character reading terrible dialogue like the Judgment Day on this program. Love, love, love Cody Rhodes. I don't know if I love this. I love the line about his mom starting the fight on the undercover cop. Really great. The LDS thing, I didn't find it funny. When he said it, I was trying to think, is this like an ironic dig at The Rock's patter? And is he trying to make the point of the toxic males are the ones who have something to hide or whatever? Or was it just bad banter in response to, is it just toxic ego versus toxic ego stuff? Like, I just couldn't tell if it was just a volley of rubbish patter, or if he was trying to make a point by co-opting that language.
Even if he was, it got the reaction of what The Rock.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
Sort of in a difficult spot there. I think he's, watch how easy it is for me to get in the sludge and then just lift myself above it.
Yeah.
But the sludge still got like a monster reaction. So he's like, I'll take that then. I'll have that. It's a wrestler. I'll have that one.
So the intention, I couldn't tell what was really going on there. And the more you think about it, the more you're not really feeling it, so it's missing the point a little bit. Two more points as well. I'm really looking forward to Cody Rhodes versus The Rock. Yeah. Paul Heyman, what it'll do to, I was like, oh yeah, it's Cody versus Roman. On the night, it's going to be hot as balls, and night one is going to inform the drama of night two. I have very few doubts, maybe a few doubts about how much The Rock is enjoying being back and being The Rock at this point. We did say, is he too good for his own good on the preview yesterday? So I'm not 100% convinced that it's going to go perfectly on night one in terms of the story told, in terms of the atmosphere, the split in the crowd. Have they maybe complicated it? I don't know. I don't think so yet. But it's a mild concern of mine, and it is, because I do feel something a lot for Cody Rhodes. But Cody versus The Rock just feels way bigger. It's threatening to completely overwhelm the build. As I said, on the night, it will be fine, I think. I truly wish Cody Rhodes had just worn his normal suit. When he comes out with the black shirt and the black blazer, it's like he's trying to put on an affectation of being, I'm gonna swear tonight.
I'm gonna go Homelander on your ass. I don't actually know the reference. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I forgot to mention that,
he did it when he dyed the hair, didn't he? And it was like,
yes,
Homelander, idiot. I was
like, yeah.
Sorry. Like this. Sorry, Cody.
I didn't need the black shirt and the black blazer with the idea of being, well, I'm going to swear tonight, I'm going to be a bit more of a badass than he used to. It just visually reminded me that he was trying a little bit hard to, you know what I mean? I didn't think this was the best night for the program, but it's still completely white hot. And this night one, night two WrestleMania thing has got the potential to be utter magic. And I'm not remotely worried about it.
On that, we've not got
5% worries.
We've not talked on pods or over the desk, but I said it to you yesterday, I think, Wilbon. Like, I think you're right about Cody and Rock and how big that's getting. I don't think the Rock's turning at WrestleMania anymore. No. I think he might pin Cody on night one to get Roman everything he needs, and then Roman screws it up and loses, and then he goes away or whatever, and they've got Rock and Cody in the chamber for another stadium. You know what I mean? Like, not 41 probably, but a SummerSlam or Saudi.
Do Roman again at Survivor Series. There's a big crowd. Cody facing at 41.
There's a big crowd waiting for that singles match, I think. And they've, seems like they've included that in the pivot, I guess. It's like, well, people are going to really want this. Let's make them want it as well. It just doesn't have to be for right now. I could be wrong. Maybe it all just does break down at WrestleMania, but it does feel like they're going to let this one simmer a bit because Cody and Rock is... It's hot stuff, isn't it?
Like, it's the match and not the match at the same time.
Yeah.
And we got as well, throughout the rest of the night, Jay approached Cody in the back saying, look, you know, I'm there for you if you need me. Cody's like, no, I'm going it alone. And we had one with Seth as well, I should mention. But immediately after this, we had Nia Jax cutting a promo saying Becky Lynch has never beaten her and never will. And she's going to take a spot at WrestleMania, basically. Then we got Ricochet versus Dominic Mysterio. Dom's in control after an early break because of McDonough, who's out there, of course. Hit an X-Factor on Ricochet. Got a two count. Goes for the Three Amigos. Ricochet reverses the second suplex with a suplex of his own, though. Dom avoided a splash. Ricochet super kicked him, knocked McDonough off the apron. But Dom tries to use the distraction to hit a 619. Ricochet ducks it, hits a recoil, wins the match, and then manages to escape Gene McDonough, who tries to attack him afterwards as well.
Like, match was psychologically very, very sound. Dominic can do nothing. Ricochet can do everything. How does the rubbish one dodge the good one? Like, structurally, spot on. I felt nothing for any of it. And I know there was a numbers disadvantage, but I didn't really love seeing the mega athlete, like, dip out of the way of the Judgment Day NWO B team. Like, unless they are keeping, like, a Braun Strowman return extremely quiet and the team are getting back together and they just absolutely decimate these two losers next time. That's like off the top of my head. That's not, I'm not trying to get this booking out of trouble of Ricochet because the match was all about he's class, he's useless. And then just thinking, oh, we've got to make sure that like we keep Dominic and JD McDonagh strong. You're trying to do too much there.
Speaking of trying to do too much, right? I don't know how good Ricochet is anymore. He's not in a system where there's a crowd that's going to react to his style. Mm. We saw it with the JD McDonagh match. They're just not really into it. And it's not on the level of what he was doing in like Dragon Gate and New Japan and PWG and all the rest of it, right? Because there's certain times I see Ricochet do things and it's like, I understand what he's trying to do and why he's trying to do it, but the effect on me is just, ugh, right? He took I can't remember when this was. I think it was a GIF or an MP4 loop on X where he takes, I think it's a phenomenal forearm of AJ Styles and just does a backflip.
Another one you're thinking of, yeah.
It's stupid. Mm. I understand that that's his style and that's what he's good at and all the rest of it, but in that it just looks stupid. This is, like, even by my standards, a really pedantic gripe, but I think it's illustrative of the wrestler Ricochet has become and how it's just not going to work for him, and the overcorrection just can't deal with it. He watch him in the split second before he pins Dominic Mysterio in this match, the most theatrical movement of his arm and flop onto the into the pin attempt. It's like, you don't have to maximize your milliseconds. You know what I mean? It's like he's trying to do something.
Especially not you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to do something, anything at every moment to get something out of this career that's, quite frankly, after the Logan Paul stuff, not really working out for him in WWE. And it just isn't, and you're a liar if you say that it is. Just that wild flail to try and get something out of a pin to impress. It's pure desperation in his work, and I find it really off-putting.
I don't totally disagree. There's definitely something to, like, you've got to work to your audience, and Ricochet, in spite of how good some of the stuff looks, often doesn't. Like, at this point, we're down to what? Like, the gorgeous shooting star press?
He's a catchphrase. Like,
it's all about, like, AJ Styles sort of, I think he thought he'd figured this out when he signed for WWE, and it's like, use some of your biggest stuff.
He did for a while.
Yeah, on the biggest stage, make it count. Like, some of the stuff he would use in that Survivor Series match against Brock Lesnar wasn't coming out before then, because it's like, right, I've got loads more that you don't see every single week. Ricochet's that wrestler too, but it still needs to be, I don't mean to sound like an online grifter here, but it does still need to be the story, or it needs to be the character, or something that you can sink your teeth into. People will still talk about, like, the time he flipped out of the ring to stare at Velveteen Dream. And that wasn't even a move, but that's just like, here I am, look at how incredible I am physically, you know? Like, there are moments wrapped within that NXT run, like, that people will still talk about as Ricochet's best bits in WWE, because he simply hasn't, it's not that he isn't replicating the spots, but you can't remember an over-the-top rope running Hurricane Rana in the main roster. He's probably done 10, but you remember the one he did in Adam Cole at a takeover. Like, the double rotation 450 that he did at War Games. I feel like he's done that at least once on the main roster, and I cannot tell you when that is. He's a good example, as we went into detail on last week, which on a video you can still watch, about in terms of where him and Ospreay have, like, travelled, about how, like, you do still have to think about your audience. Like, maybe it's too lazy to say he would fit in AEW, but I think he would have a better first night in AEW than the last 5
They're
years.
More receptive to that style of wrestling.
He'd have a great debut, more than anything he's done the main roster on one night in Dynamite. Like, and I don't know what I love the Braun tag. So when Braun is fit, the answer is probably in that, because he felt like he had a personality.
Right, let's get on to Gunther, Sami Zayn, and Chad Gable. Do it all in one go here.
Yeah.
Even though it's separated, but there's a match in amongst all this. Sami Zayn approaches Chad Gable in the back. He says, last week's match was an honour. Hasn't been pushed like that in a long time. Could have gone either way. And Gable's just like, yeah, it's great. Zayn's like, what's wrong? I'm like, come on, Sammy, work it out. Gable said, look, last week's match meant more to me. And Zayn's like, come on, that's not fair. I've got a family at home. My kid cried when I lost as well.
We've got kids.
Yeah. You can't tell me what this means to me. Boys. Because you don't know what it means to me.
You get it?
No, I don't.
Gable said, he knew all of that. The issue isn't about that. Zane was like, what is it then? And he's like, you can't beat Gunther. And then we go to the contract signing. Gunther's out there in a resplendent in a suit. Sami Zayn isn't. And Gunther says, look how important this title is, this match is, this contract signing is. And you dress like a bum in the audience, basically. Zayn says, your smug smile's starting to piss me off. I know you don't think I can beat you. People didn't think I could even make it here in WWE, let alone win championships or main event WrestleMania. I ended the longest tag team title reign in history last year, and I'm going to end the longest IC title reign this year. He signs the contract. The crowd are loving it. Gunther tells Sammy, you should listen to Gable. The fans love you, but they know that you can't beat me. And I don't think you believe it in yourself either. You're going to receive the beating of a lifetime on the grandest stage of them all, and your dreams are going to meet reality. And Gunther signs and goes to leave, but Sammy tells him to wait. He says, you don't see belief in my eyes? Why don't you look again? Get a good long look, because you're looking in the eyes of the man who's going to take you down at WrestleMania. And then we see Zayn storm through the back, and then we get the match. And then Zayn confronts Chad Gable in the back following this, wanting to know why he thought he couldn't beat Gunther. And Gable's like, this isn't just a physical game with Gunther, it's mental. You made a career out of being the underdog that kind of gets out of any hole that he's in. You find the window of opportunity, but that simply doesn't happen against Gunther. He's a different kind of animal than anything you've ever faced, and if you don't change your mentality, you won't win. Big stuff, this. Arguably, potentially, hyperbolically, the real WrestleMania main event.
No,
it isn't.
I know, we've got to get a title out of it. Just play the game.
But in another year, there's
literally two main events, and they're both much bigger than this.
In another year,
title, and it's going to get SEO in there. So come on.
In another year, maybe. And again, say this quite a lot, but we have to change the conversation on the Intercontinental title forever now. Like, the Bret, Shawn, Razor stuff is dead. If you win that belt, and this is to Sami Zayn and Chad Gable and everybody else, if you win that belt and you're not upholding what we thought about it while Gunther's got it, then you failed. Like, you rehabilitate that belt for a reason. It's not like Gunther has rehabilitated this. This reign has rehabilitated it. A Booker. Triple H has rehabilitated it too. It's everybody. But then you have to put just as much care in after the fact, and that's pressure, and that's good pressure.
Yeah.
Because all Intercontinental title builds should feel like this one. It should matter just as much to the next challenger it does to Sami Zayn here at WrestleMania. The years that this belt didn't get defended on WrestleMania and nobody gave a toss, right? Or the years it was thrown up in a multi-man because it was just something to do for the a bunch of guys that you forgot to come up with any creative for, and it's February.
Yes.
Like years and years and years and years. And nobody really flagged it as abuse to that belt because, again, it just, you lost faith in it. There's two world titles. There's two secondary titles. Like, and this one used to have meaning. We're back. Like with the Intercontinental title, we're all the way back. And like, I love that a program like this is a reminder of that, because we're here at WrestleMania yet again, like we were with the Gunther last year. And I've had a 24-hour reversal where I thought, the thing about Sammy is I love him and he can talk me into most things, but he can't talk me into thinking he can beat Gunther. Well, he has.
Mm.
So well done, Sami Zayn. And I know that's a subjective thing and everyone's going to have their own feelings, but I just thought Sami Zayn was exceptional here. He used the exact same line he used against Roman Reigns about winning that title, and he failed. It's kind of about as close as you can get to the old guarantee of victory without betraying yourself if you fail, and that's a really hard tightrope to walk, and he walked that. Sami Zayn can do it better than most. So I should never have doubted him. That was on me. Gunther, fantastic as always. He again measures exactly how to be an arrogant sports entertainer without ever being a cartoon. It's almost, he sees it as disrespectful that you think you can beat him. And that's an attitude that I like out of my dominant champion. Hamlet bingo coming, because Triple H found a link that I hadn't thought about. The ending a title reign last year that was the longest of all time. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Sami Zayn has, like, there you go. I have got previous, and here's how. I hadn't even considered that. I'd forgotten that Uso's reign was as long as it was, and brilliant. That's what I want as a... One thing might get in Gunther's head, and it's that. If you believe all this to be real, that's the thing that Gunther should be thinking about, should be gotten to, because on this stage, you haven't done it like Sami Zayn's done it, and I'll buy all of that. On Chad Gable, Sidge mentioned last week that he thought a heel turn was incoming, and I still think that might be the case, but I could just as easy see that as a screws him out the title out of resentment, or uses this as a, like, he's negging him into beating him, and then waits for Sammy to win because he's got his own doubts and his own sort of lack of self-belief over Gunther, and then beats Sami Zayn for as a heel. For Chad Gable here to say beforehand, you can't beat him. Now go out there and speak to him. And then afterwards, bollock him for not having the commitment. It's like, you're the one that put that doubt in his head, you little bastard, right? You made a point in the office, half flippantly, but then the more we all sort of thought about it, oh yeah, maybe. Like, Chad Gable joined Imperium, bit weird. Chad Gable believes the ring's sacred, and he was wearing a suit last night. Sami Zayn wasn't. He was dressed as Gunther would like to be a challenger for the Intercontinental title, the prestigious Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. He was dressed for the part, but it's not his part anymore. So I quite like those little details as well, to be a little bastard and then have Sami thinking after the fact, like, oh, and you put me in the bad. I was ready to go and sign a contract, and you've made me feel bad about this. So I just thought the way that it was all structured was really nice. We have made a point on this podcast to not go hog wild in the praise of, thank God Kevin Dunn's out of here. But that was a really nice shot. Following Sami Zayn all the way to the back, feeding the awesome truth coming in, and then like you having a minute to sit with Sami Zayn. It reminded me of when John Moxley stormed into the building. Like, a man is pissed off about a thing, and you're going to sit with that for a minute. Like, I can't remember WWE ever doing that. Probably somebody will correct me if they've got a better memory for this in the comments, but like, considering what he was walking out from, and the challenge of his life since the last challenge of his life, last WrestleMania, I thought this was a really inspired choice to have you go on that little journey back with Sami Zayn to go and find Chad Gable.
Yeah.
All right then, mate. And then Chad Gable was like, yeah, but also this. You've changed the rules. Like, what are the rules here? And the rules are, it's really hard to beat Gunther. Like, best bit of a Raw that I really enjoyed. A stunning bit of work. And as I say, yeah, the main events are stacked and jacked. That's clickbait. Sorry, guys. But like, on another year, in a different time, in a different PLE.
Could be match of the weekend, though.
And yeah, in a different PLE, in a different time, and there's a frigging big one coming in Berlin. This is headlining without a doubt. Gunther's class, Sami Zayn forever. I'm in. it's all right, you know, this is good.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. From my vantage point, what's happened here? And I will hold my hands up if I'm wrong and WrestleMania unfolds in a different manner to that which I expect. I think what's happened here is that they've said to themselves, Gunther is not losing the Intercontinental title. Right, what do we do now? This doesn't, and I would argue can't, feel like all or nothing drama. The guy you really want to win going up against the guy who doesn't lose, because they want to keep hold of one record when
Cody finishes the story, and all of this stuff surrounding the Intercontinental title just feels a little bit lesser than it could be. If it's not, I don't know what you do if you don't want Gunther to lose the title. I don't think there's a particularly good way of telling that story, because it just feels like, I've said it with Gunther, when was the last time he had one of these? He is meant to be the guy who has great wrestling matches in WWE. That's kind of his gimmick. He's, I think, great at being that sort of elegant, like, sanctimonious, just great presence. But the whole idea is he is meant to be your great match generator, and I'm sorry, that's the gimmick. When was the last one? The last great Gunther match? I don't know.
I love the Jey Uso one, but I know you weren't as high on that one. But I thought that was strong.
You didn't go that high on it. I remember I sat here with you.
It was. He's not hit the heights of the stuff he was doing with Sheamus. There's levels to that. Again, and that I will absolutely concede. Yeah. Like, there's, I think, like, he set standards that he himself has not always kept.
Yeah.
But I think he was, that itself was like a level
up. I'm ready for him to level up. I think he's done what he's could with this Intercontinental title. I feel like it's a big, big, big Triple H book and crutch, these long, long, long title reigns. I don't necessarily hit great heights every single week. So I guess my feeling, and it might be completely unfounded that there will not be a title switch at WrestleMania, is informing my about all of this. But from my vantage point, what they've done here, and yes, Sami Zayn will always get a reaction on the night, but the general mood surrounding the Sami Zayn character is that he's not as hot as he was last year, and people kind of wanted Gable. This could have been the making of him. This guy, you could argue, is one of the most talented babyfaces of a generation that only just is recognizing how good babyfaces can be. He toiled away, just being great for years and years and years. He's not obviously getting his moments. He's probably going to turn heel. And I just think there's maybe a bit of lingering indirect resentment from my personal towards Sami Zayn. And I know he got a huge reaction last night, but the general consensus online, which might be a bubble, was, Sami, not Chad.
Well, you drew that comparison earlier on, didn't you, with DIY and the Creeds again. It's like, oh,
there's
three wrestlers now that I would rather see than three I've got. Yeah.
And I don't think that's particularly effective booking. I like to look at what I could have won.
Chad's thing is a gamble. I'd like the Gable gamble.
I think it is going to be the making of him. I think this. I still, you know, I trust WWE. I let it play out with this company.
Yeah.
And I think that, I think eventually, one way or another, like, it was sort of joking, and then I was like, well, that could work, maybe. I don't know, with him in Imperium and what have you. But, like, one way or another, Gunther is having a huge match in Berlin, and that could be him winning the world title. It could be him losing the Intercontinental title. I don't know. But I have faith that they aren't, you know, they're not just going, well, Sammy's taking your spot, so just go off and do something else, Chad.
Yeah, I think there's, like, I feel genuine intrigue around this Chad Gable thing. And that's a, you know, that's a hard thing for pro wrestling to summon up, because typically, and we're sat on this podcast, because you like to think you kind of know where things are going to go for the most part. And I can't quite figure it out with Gable. I don't share Sidgwick thing of like, that might be a thing lost there. He was the babyface to go with. But only because, again, this is clearing low bar stuff. It's not let it play out around, let's see where this Shorty G goes. Like, this feels like investment in a proper Chad Gable. But I do take, like, and I've felt it certainly before. I felt it this time last year with Cody Rhodes. I was like, you get one go and you've just blew it. Like, Gable's been lucky to get several goals, so you never know when it's the last chance for him.
But I get it. I get it with Chad Gable. But I do understand, like you say, if they are going, we have to have Gunther retain. And by the way, what a huge story that would be, that every other title changes hands and Gunther still walks out as Intercontinental Champion.
And again, about records falling and stuff, it's more promo material. Yeah. It's more, the mountain only gets steeper and harder.
But in terms of if he is retaining, I can't think of hardly anyone better to have Gunther face for a just not quite there match than Sami Zayn. I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, I just think what's happened here is that they've got a babyface who kind of could have had that one big win. And I'm never saying it's as simple as, oh, you put him over, he gets it over. It did feel for a while like, oh, this could be the making of Chad Gable if he wins. That's not on the table. And then you've got that cooling off an enduring popular babyface in Sami Zayn by drawing the comparison. I just think they've overthought it.
So we see, as we mentioned, after the contract signing, Zayn storm through the back, past Miz, R-Truth, DIY. And Miz is like, yeah, we need that sort of mentality. Indus Share walk by, and R-Truth goes, sorry for her, has to fight them. That's you, R-Truth. It was R-Truth and the Miz versus Indus Share, one of the WrestleMania ladder match qualifiers. Truth starts the match, Sanger flexes him, and he goes, I don't fancy it, actually. So they beat Miz up for a bit. He gets a hot tag to Truth, who does the Cena bits, puts Veer in the STF. Sanger breaks it up. Miz and Truth hit Sanger with a double drop kick and hit him with the skull-crushing finale flatliner combo. So Veer's down. Sanger shoves Miz into the ropes. Miz gets involved with Mahal, I think, with a drop kick. Truth goes to go after Sanger. Sanger elbows him, and he falls backwards onto Veer and gets the win.
It's dire.
Like I always called, Awesome Truth qualifying for a six-pack ladder match at WrestleMania. Like I always called.
Dire comedy, and I think the execution was piss poor as well.
Yeah, this was pretty weak.
That was really weak.
I was...
The Miz was in it.
I was relieved that Awesome Truth made the match. Not that I didn't think they would lose, but it was just nice to see them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to see them added to the graphic. I like stuff like that. My favourite guys. They've done it.
Wasn't there a bit where the Miz does the thing where he... Does that kick through the ropes? Mm-hmm. It's completely botched the timing, and it just didn't look good at all.
Rubbish.
Yeah, it's bad. It's like, bad.
God bless him. Like he's never going to be that good at this. But like
for 20 freaking years,
yeah, never going to be that good at it. Like, but it's Awesome Truth, isn't it? Like, and as well, like said it for ages and ages and ages, and I just wish the haters would leave them alone because R-Truth continues to be mega over.
Mm.
Like it was a loud show. And his was one of the loudest reactions. They absolutely should be on the WrestleMania card.
Well, they should be. I'm not
meritocracy stuff. Yeah. Like, they should be there, and I'm glad they made it.
Drew McIntyre comes out. But
there's loads left of this show.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Still loads to talk about. Drew McIntyre comes out. Drew McIntyre comes out, but he gets interrupted as part of his entrance by Seth Rollins. Breezes past Drew, apologises when he gets in there, says he didn't see him. He's busy soaking up the spotlight. McIntyre wanted him to enjoy it, though, because he said the spotlight's going to be mine after WrestleMania. He says, you're kind of dumb, Drew. You kind of said a lot of stupid things recently. But you said one thing that I thought was correct. He puts his hand in the air and says, my name is Seth freaking Rollins, and I'm a spotlight junkie. McIntyre calls him...
That was really funny, that.
A parody of himself. The only thing McIntyre cares about is their match. The punchline's going to come when he beats Rollins at Mania. But Rollins said that wasn't a joke when I called myself a spotlight junkie. I've been doing this for 20 years, and he loves the feeling when he comes out on that stage. It gets better every time when the crowd sings his song. It gives him the fix he craves. He's going to make the bloodline his bitches on night one, and the spotlight's going to be on them on night two. McIntyre said he's almost glad to see this side of Seth Rollins, but he made a mistake making the spotlight about the bloodline. Rollins has worked hard to make this belt the workhorse title. Spotlight should be about that. But he's not going to get the moment he deserves at Mania. Drew's going to get the moment he earned. And Rollins said, well, you're a spotlight junkie as well. You want the spotlight because, you know, WrestleMania, you won the title years ago. It was in an empty warehouse. You fumbled the ball when you got the chance again. I shine the brightest when the lights are on. And at WrestleMania, you're going to find out, Drew, you're not as good as you think you are.
This could have been terrible. And I thought it ended up excellent. Honestly, like the start of it, like the spotlight junkie, I was like, what are we doing here?
It's crap, man.
And in fact, what I think happened was they gave him a diarrhea Dwayne in order to start cheesy and get... So it was like it was a device, ultimately. It was like a load of bollocks that ended Seth. And then like Drew calls it, Seth calls it back. And all of a sudden, you've opened the door for Seth to pick at this hypocritical Drew McIntyre character in a way that nobody's really been able to do yet because he keeps validating his point. He's had to validate his point all the way to get to this match at WrestleMania. And only now can somebody be like, well, here's how that's bollocks and it's about time somebody said it. It's about time that you were called out for it. And you've kind of forced me into this by calling out my nonsense as well. You're just as bad as me, but here's the deal. You're not even as good as me. And I just thought like, again, like there was a groan-inducing line that became something so much more. for all that Drew McIntyre deserves all the praise in the world for this character, and he is fantastic at it. He's fantastic at performing it. I loved, again, the use of the Punk stuff here, not least because it becomes canon again next week, mm-hmm. and we're going to see how that all plays out. I know I was like high on Seth Rollins for how he survived. I felt he survived the four-way promo thing and thrived. I think I'm just going to give him some credit. I think I'm just going to isolate Seth Rollins for some praise because I think he performs in this role very... I love how much he buys this. He knows that a bunch of people think that he's a bit of a hack as a wrestler, a bit of a fraud or a copy of a copy in terms of a Kenny Omega or Will Ospreay or whoever else he's like stolen from or liberally borrowed from or whatever. He was never even really... He was from Ring of Honor and was never even really a Ring of Honor favorite. He was almost like a guy that looked like he was WWE ready within a Ring of Honor that was starting to die on the vine a little bit. I really bought into Seth Rollins here because I love it when he's like locked in and getting to call out Drew McIntyre. And I like, it's this world title thing, it's this world title conundrum. I'll flip week to week at toy belt, fake, nonsense. It's like, oh, fair play, you've done it again. You've sold me on a fake belt and I'm going to buy it at WrestleMania. Yeah. It's going to feel like a world title match at WrestleMania. WWE have made two world titles work again. And I don't know how you've done it. And I just thought this was a tremendous week for the pair of them. Punk being the Spectre. Oh,
I should mention that as well. Yeah, prior to this, there was a promotional video. WrestleMania's in Philadelphia, says the Punker. What are the first four letters of Philadelphia? Phil. Whether or not I'm invited.
Rubbish.
Never like, matters. It popped Mr. Chambers of the What Culture Paris, that's for sure.
That's his name too.
It never matters to CM Punk. He's going to be there.
Oh my God.
The quality of this promo didn't matter to Michael Hamflett because he's going to be there. And I just like lost it. Like... him, like, obviously putting that right before this allowed him to be the Spectre in all of this so that Drew could reference it, so that Seth could be like, look, get your eyes on the prize, mate, because it's not CM Punk. Like, Seth resents CM Punk's involvement in this as much as Drew, which is why this is quite nice. Drew's little I Saved WrestleMania t-shirt because he's bailed out the main event in Punk's absence. Like, I thought it was going to be really difficult to have a character call out Drew, and they found a way to do it that I thought was quite elegant.
Seth Rollins is a geek. Seth Rollins, I'm sorry, he's just an unfunny geek. And when he did that spotlight hog business, if I'm to have, am I being told by WWE and by Seth Rollins that he did that as a sort of a way of like self-aware bollocks?
He was daring Drew, and then so we could catch him out, basically.
Just like, indistinguishable to his usual terrible patter, his usual awful bants.
I think I like this too. I like, honestly, they're lining up, well, two cards, a second card. They're lining up two cards that I just think feel stronger by the week. Mm. Like, I've enjoyed getting things made formal, ultimately. I'm a match graphics guy. But, like, I just think, like, this card is another, like, again, like last year, it's another Triple H.
It's top heavy. Hmm? It's top heavy, this card.
It's only because the...
It's more cool programs than hard.
Only because the top is so heavy.
Yeah.
No, like, again, I think this, like last year's WrestleMania, is feeling to me like a bit of a flex from Triple H. Like, these are the characters you have watched all year. These are the characters you are super invested in. They're all, feels to me like most programs are peaking at the right time. Like, most
they
matches.
They need to get on with the Seth Drew thing. This did nothing for me.
I just think they're all of these matches are standing up for themselves, I think. Like, that's why I like this Raw. Like, it was just a WrestleMania preview show dressed as a Raw. You just felt like every single segment, with the exception maybe of Candice LeRae, I guess, was focused on like WrestleMania for these, WrestleMania for these, WrestleMania for these. It's far superior way of putting over WrestleMania than all the years when the geeks would come out and point at the sign and keep their fingers crossed. Like, again, this is the basics that I think he does well. That I know you disagree, but this is what
Seth
I think
Rollins
he gets
is
right.
Just a dork who isn't funny. I just cringe whenever he's on my telly. I just do.
Becky Lynch says she's just weeks away from Mania. She's risking it all tonight, though, because that's what she does. She takes risks and loves fighting. She's going to be the last woman standing, basically. And then The Rock's announced for Raw, the go-home Raw ahead of WrestleMania.
Yeah.
CM Punk and The Rock on the same goddamn card.
I mean, that'd be pretty cool.
Hottest show in the frigging world.
And I should mention as well, Liv Morgan approached Becky Lynch as she was going out for the main event.
What's the deal? You know, when Punk first came back on that SmackDown and they thought, we're going to give you a backstage look at him with like six guys. Oh, he's going to bump into Kofi. He's in the same room as Cody Rhodes. There's Kevin Owens. What if they do that with The Rock?
That'd be pretty cool.
Awesome. Becky Lynch wondered if she had to watch out for Morgan tonight.
I'm going to fly to America the next day, but I'm not going to need a plane. Those two come face to face. Go to the fucking sun.
You need 2 weeks off. You need 2 weeks off the fair. It's an addiction.
Yeah. Damn right it is.
You need 2 weeks off, man, I'm telling you.
Before we get to the main event, though, it's time for another WrestleMania qualifying match. Oh, God. New Day versus Otis and Akira Tozawa. Otis ran over Woods and...
Like Adam Copeland over here. Yeah.
He's a wrestler over here.
We get the gyrations from Otis. New Day gets sent outside and Tozawa hit a big dive to take us to a break. When we come in, Otis and Kingston tag in. Otis hits Kofi with a back elbow, knocks down Woods with a clothesline, slams Kingston, hits the caterpillar for two. Missed a splash, but Tozawa made the tag. He hit Kofi with a flying crossbody for two, but Woods comes in and hits a tornado DDT for two. Tozawa takes Woods down off the top with Hurricane Rana, hits diving senton, but Kofi Kingston breaks up the cover. Kingston gives Otis a tornado DDT outside the ring. Tozawa tries for a Hurricane Rana. Woods blocks it, though. Spinning sit-out powerbomb and the flying elbow drop gets the 1-2-3 for the New Day. They qualify for the WrestleMania ladder match, quite rightly.
Yeah, but, like, too much of a foregone conclusion for the bumps. Like, the obvious winner and obvious loser to the extent where, like, why are you doing all this to yourselves? Like, not a cat in hell's chance. Like, obviously, you get banana skin wins and it's a real surprise when somebody gets in unexpectedly. This wasn't going to be it. And I, too, have enjoyed the New Day finding, like, a different gear in 2024 through the Imperium feud. Probably should have found another tag team if there was one kicking around to make this look like this hard fought win, because it was a stroll that they all wrestled as if it was a struggle. And I just thought, like, there's too much very, very intense wrestling happening in front of me for something that nobody in a million years buys. Like, that was the result of. So a bit of a waste of time.
A fun bracket of the qualifiers.
Yeah. I didn't have much fun. Like, I'd rather just said on the New Day, get past because of class.
Yeah.
Like, then save yourself some bumps around WrestleMania season in case you risk, like, breaking your arm or something.
Yeah, I'll never remember this in a million years.
Yeah.
Before the main event, they acknowledge Becky Lynch going to the White House.
You won't have folks,
I'm not a kid around here. She needs to be Rhea Ripley and become champion, folks. Let's go get some ice cream.
Becky
Why Lynch. Have you... It doesn't matter. Go on. We're already wasting enough time as it is.
Becky Lynch, Nia Jax.
It's not going to say before the main event for the things that happened in the third hour, in the first hour. You just got me excited about main event time, and then you pulled that rug.
Well, it's because I wasn't kidding around here, Sitch. We were at the main event. People love it. You've got to give the people what they want. That's what Excalibur tells me all the bloody time.
last woman standing. Jax knocks her down to the floor. We go to a break. We come back, and they're both having a bloody...
At no point in this podcast have you criticised Michael Cole for saying the same things.
Oh, I'll talk about the commentators. It was really funny when Pat McAfee nearly injured himself falling off the chair doing the Jey Uso thing.
I hate him so much.
What if he like tore the muscle off his bone in his knee?
Like my,
I might do that at WrestleMania, actually.
My 16-year-old Smiths fan heart is repelled by his jock energy.
Yeah.
I love it when he did the, let's get in my belly. right, they come back from a break. Becky Lynch is having a nightmare setting up
take
a table.
Podcasting so, with Raj Geary.
So's Nia Jax. You take that back right now. Anyway, Nia Jax chucks a bunch of chairs in the ring, gives Lynch a Samoan drop onto the pile, but Lynch obviously beats the
Raj Geary, more like Raj Geary, R-A-D-G-E. That's why that joke works.
Lynch hits a bulldog onto the chair, goes something off the top, but Jax just swings a chair as she comes off it.
I like this match.
Yeah, it's class, this.
It was that good.
Jax gets hit with a kendo. Oh, no, sure. She hits Becky with a kendo stick, body slams Lynch onto a chair and hits the leg drop. She does the sitting on the chair and choking her. But Becky Lynch scrabbles around, grabs her kendo stick.
That wasn't bad.
Get away from it. Jax responds by just smashing Becky in the face with some steel steps, but she misses the leg drop on her apron, my hole. Becky Lynch gives a DDT onto the stairs, and they go to a break as Becky Lynch is sliding a table into the ring, because that's what the fans want, of course. Jax puts Lynch on a table outside the ring, starts climbing the ladder, but Lynch rolls off, and as Jax goes after her, surprise, she hits her with a fire extinguisher in the face. Lynch tries a spear through the table that's been propped up in the corner, but Jax just catches her and Samoan drops her through the table. She hits an annihilator as well, and Becky Lynch just beats the count, rolling to the outside and landing on her feet. Nia Jax set up for a big Samoan drop off the apron through the table, but Lynch fights out of it. Manhandle slam off the apron through the table, which looked awesome. Big Jax just beats the count, but she's struggling around. Oh, bloody hell. She's leaning on the announce table, still recovering. And whilst that's happening, Lynch has gone to the top of the ladder, hits a huge diving leg drop through the announce table. And the ref counts to 10. Becky Lynch finally defeats Nia Jax. Great finish. And Rhea Ripley comes out, and there's a stare down to close out this show.
Becky Lynch is just one of the best wrestlers in the whole stinking Fed. Honestly, man. Like, everything here was opportune. Like, everything she was doing.
The finish was really seamless.
Yeah.
Like, I really liked the finish. I thought I was bored by the rest.
I just think she's such a smart wrestler. And I'm maybe praising her for the basics, but I just don't think there's enough of it now. Like, I'm reminded of, like, we were talking about with Scott this morning, but like the Christian Jungle Boy coffin match. Christian works the entire match on escape, and then he'll cheat a bit, and then he'll get caught out, and then he'll escape again.
Didn't do a single, like, offensive move.
Like, there's not enough of it, genuinely. And Becky Lynch has entered that tier for me where, like, I watch her match, and they're just so sound. Like, she's thought through. Like, I've compared it to Bret Hart before on this podcast, and I still think that comparison's hold true. Sometimes the execution isn't anywhere near Bret, but that's not Becky's appeal. Just structurally, God, she thinks. Like, she sits down and she thinks, and you can tell she sits with the wrestler and makes sense of their stuff to help make sense of her stuff for all of the beats to flow perfectly. Like, she knows what she's doing with Nia Jax at this point, but this was going to be different because she was going to win. So it's like, well, how can I, as a selfless babyface, show even more ass before I get the win? Mm-hmm. Because this can't have been for nothing. Yes, I'm finally, like, theoretically slaying the dragon. She's not pinned her, so they can absolutely revisit if they want to. I don't know, but, like, they could.
I do. I love it. But I love, like, these two together.
But
I've had a complete 180 on Nia Jax in the last year or so. I think she's sensational.
They've got a good chemistry, they do.
Yeah.
But Becky Lynch is different gravy. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I just thought, again, like, she was never... Babyfaces can't be on the run. But, like, this was yet another, like, structurally wonderful Becky. I love watching her work. I have such high hopes. Again, is that the one that's going to let down on that? Because I've got such high hopes of what she can do with Rhea Ripley. Like, that has the potential to be absolute magic, and a totally different kind of magic to the Rhea Charlotte magic last year as well. There's a different story to be told there. Becky Lynch has told it with Nia. She's told it with Charlotte. She knows how to work a Rhea Ripley and just make something special. And I really hope they do it. I really do.
Thought the finish, like, I love a plunder sequence that flows elegantly into the next to make it look opportune. It's just one of my favorite things, and specifically in that kind of match, but in wrestling in general. And I was pretty bored for the duration, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think we've talked a lot about, like, 5-year deals and wrestlers being around forever and all the rest of it. And it's like, for me, Nia Jax has impressed in this comeback run. Looks a much better. Is it just a low bar that's just not killing people? And just doing the really limited one-dimensional role that she could have been doing all along, was she not so completely reckless. She is now a bit safer, a bit. She's rediscovered aura, and that's really important. But this is why a wrestler like that, in the days of yore, that archetype of wrestler would go, right, done here, go somewhere else. Done here, go somewhere else. Seen enough now. Oh, can she be taken off a vertical base?
Even Sid going to play softball. It was like, that's good, actually.
Take
6 months off Sid, because he's going to come back and be class again.
Like, there's a lot of, oh, can she be removed from a vertical base?
Yeah.
It's like, well, she can, and she will most matches now. It's like, my tastes have evolved. It's a very 1980s, but good style of wrestling, and she's done it quite well, but that's the most you'll get out of Nia Jax. And I've seen enough now, but what a finish. What a great finish to the match. And I echo everything that Hamford says about Becky Lynch.
Well, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw in the comment section below, or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamford at...
Michael Hamford.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be back later on today to preview the best wrestling show of the week, NXT. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to Hamlet Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.